Chapter 18, Fish Barrels. Bordeaux at last. A wild September evening drawing in rapidly. A fresh smell of the sea blowing up the broad river. A general air of business and prosperity, and three children standing silently a little aside from the crowd in one of the largest of the docks. They had slept the previous night at a little village only a mile or two from the town, and had arrived at Bordeaux early, in order that they might have the whole day before them to gain intelligence about a ship. They had been somewhat dismayed on finding how very little money they had left, but still hoped to find it enough to pay their passage to Amsterdam. They had grown much more cautious since the arrest at Marmandy, and therefore did not like to make many direct inquiries for what they wanted, and as they scarcely knew how to set about gaining the information they wanted, they had lingered about the docks all day without coming to any definite arrangement. They knew that there was now a strict law forbidding all Protestants to leave the country under pain of death, and were disinclined to put themselves into the power of a stranger, as to a certain extent they must do if they went openly to engage a passage. The circumstance of three children embarking alone was in those times sufficient in itself to cause suspicion. Deep in thought, they did not notice that they had even now been for the last 10 minutes the objects of a close scrutiny, until a young man about 20 years of age, evidently a gentleman, approached Henry and said in good French, but with a slight foreign accent, "Monsieur has been waiting some time. Can I have the pleasure of being any service to him?" He took off his hat with a graceful recognition of Marie's presence as he spoke, and stood before them, a tall, well-made young fellow, with fair hair, bright blue eyes, and a very un-French expression of countenance. Seeing that Henry hesitated, he smiled and said, "Monsieur is a stranger in Bordeaux, is he not?" "Yes, we have only arrived this morning," answered Henry slowly, still uncertain as how far they might trust this new friend. "Monsieur must then allow me to introduce myself. I am Harold Venec, nephew by marriage to Monsieur Edvray, who is master of these docks." Marie looked up with a sudden light of relief. Few of the Protestant refugees had not heard by this time of Monsieur Edvray and his kindness to the Reformed. Men said that he was of the religion in heart, and only called himself Roman Catholic for the better service of the cause. Harold Venec saw her glance and remarked to Henry, "Mademoiselle has heard, I see, of my uncle's name. I have noticed that Monsieur has been trying to get information of some kind all day. Perhaps if Monsieur would trust me, I might be able to help him." "We were looking for a vessel ready to sail without delay for Amsterdam," said Henry, allowing his natural frank smile to appear. The young man bowed. "Exactly," he replied. "I think we have one or two starting almost immediately. But it is becoming cold here for Mademoiselle, your sister. May I suggest that you should accompany me to visit my uncle, who will be able to furnish you with all particulars?" Henry looked at his sister. "Will you go, Marie?" he asked, in a tone intended for her alone. "Yes," said Marie, without any hesitation. "We know Monsieur Devray. He is a man to be trusted." Henry therefore accepted the proposal as courteously as it had been made, and they followed their new friend out of the dockyard. Marie noticed that he seemed to be known to everyone they met, and that almost everyone touched his cap in token of respect. They went a little way down the principal street and stopped at the door of a large, handsome house. An old man opened the door to them, and at a few words from their conductor, in a language which the children did not think was English or German, ushered them into a small, neatly furnished room and left them there alone. They looked at each other with a curious sense of mingled relief and perplexity. They were at an end of their troubles. Were they at an end of their troubles, or only in a fresh one? They had not time to exchange many words about it before Harold returned, and with him a tall, elderly Frenchman with a keen, grave, though at the same time a kindly face. He announced himself as Monsieur de Vray, and inquired their business somewhat formally. "We are ashamed thus to intrude upon you, began Henry frankly, "but Monsieur, your nephew, assured us that you would be good enough to give information as to the best way of taking our passage for Amsterdam." "In a Roman Catholic or a Protestant ship?" asked Monsieur de Vray gravely. "Monsieur need not be afraid to answer me." "In a Protestant ship, then," answered Henry. "One does not fear to inform Monsieur de Vray that we are of the Reformed religion." "So we suppose," said Harold, who had not before spoken, and with the bright smile which had irresistibly inspired them with confidence. "It is all right, I think, mine uncle. You know that there is now a law forbidding all Protestants to leave the country," said Monsieur de Vray. "We have heard so, Monsieur," replied Henry sadly, "but we are determined to do so if possible. If we cannot manage it from Bordeaux, we shall try somewhere else." "The right spirit," answered Monsieur de Vray with a smile and a look of interest. "I would not be too curious, my young Monsieur, but I seem to find a likeness in that face to someone whom I used to know." "Oh, Monsieur, can you have known our father?" exclaimed Marie eagerly, while Henry at the same time answered, "Our father was Louis de St. Croix of St. Croix and of St. Louis de Lenard in the Cavines." "Are you indeed the children of Monsieur de St. Croix?" said Monsieur de Vray as he took Marie's hand and looked earnestly into her beautiful eyes. "I did not know your father well, my dear young lady, but I did know him and respected no man more. In him we have lost a wise and brave nobleman, as well as a true Christian." Tears came into Marie's eyes, and the two boys came also nearer to this man who had known their father. Harold Van Eck exclaimed impulsively, "It is all right then, is it not, mine uncle? We can at once explain to them the way of leaving Bordeaux." "Certainly," said Monsieur de Vray, and with far more readiness than before. "Are you afraid to be a little cramped and uncomfortable for a time, mademoiselle?" The three children looked at each other with a half smile. "We have spent two nights in an oven before now," said Henry in a low tone. "That is good preparation," said Harold, laughing, but checking himself when he saw the sad look on Marie's face. He rose from his seat and opened a small door, which looked as if it led to a cupboard, but which displayed instead a narrow, dark passage down which Monsieur de Vray proceeded to light them. They came out into a small yard in the open air, in which there were standing several large barrels, such as were used for exporting fish. From this yard another door led into the outer and general yard, where they could see men busily at work in packing the barrels. Monsieur stooped down and held the light into one of the barrels, which was lying on its side. "I am afraid mademoiselle will find it a little dark and musty," he said, "but it is the only way in which we can safely transport her on board ship." "Must we all get in there?" said Marie, slightly dismayed at the prospect. "It will be worse than the oven." "Oh, not all, mademoiselle," exclaimed Harold. "We can at least supply you with a barrel apiece, so that you will not be suffocated." "It is very kind of you," said Marie, turning to Monsieur de Vray with tears in her eyes. "We do not know how to thank you." Also, Guillaume and Henry endeavored to express their gratitude for the unexpected boon thus conferred on them, and Henry asked how soon the vessel would start. One leaves in command of my nephew there. Tomorrow at daybreak, answered Monsieur de Vray. If that is not too soon for you, I will engage that he will be proud and glad to render any service to the children of Monsieur de St. Croix. Harold most warmly seconded the plan, and it was ultimately agreed by all. Moreover, Monsieur de Vray insisted on their remaining as his guests for the night, and took them into a magnificently furnished sitting room, where his wife received them with the greatest ease and cordiality. And she was well accustomed to entertaining Protestant fugitives by this time, for Monsieur de Vray made a regular practice of thus facilitating their escape from France. For the first time for more than 3 weeks, it seemed rather 3 years, so much had happened in that short time, and they lay down to rest in a luxuriously appointed bedroom, and Marie, as she bade Henry good night in the presence of their hostess, touched her long black hair, a little rough from the windy day, with a smile and the slightest possible shrug of her French shoulders. However, she found a maid waiting for her when she got upstairs, and had to submit to a much more vigorous brushing than she had been used to for some time. They were wakened very early in the morning, and came down to a substantial breakfast with only Monsieur de Vray and Harold, whose brightness and fun were so infectious that the children grew merrier than they had done for a long time. Madame de Vray sent an excuse by her husband, as she could never make up her mind to begin the day so early. The vessel was to start at 12, and all the real cargo had, of course, been shipped before. This was a last load, containing 2 or 3 barrels of merchandise, in case the royal officers should insist on examination, and in the center were the 3 which were to contain Marie, Henry, and Galoum. Immediately after breakfast, they proceeded down the passage into the same yard that they had seen last night. Here a cart upon which the barrels were already placed was waiting, and 2 men with it, who were evidently accustomed to the work, and touched their hats with a sympathetic smile at the young fugitives. It was still dusk, and the whole thing seemed very strange and unreal. "Shall I go first?" asked Henry, seeing that his sister hesitated. Marie looked up at him with a smile of relief, and bidding goodbye to Monsieur de Vray, he sprung at once upon the cart and dived down to the bottom of his barrel, whence his voice was heard assuring them that it was rather a jolly place than otherwise. "Ah, but how now?" laughed Harold, clapping the top on, which had 1 or 2 small rough holes in it for breathing. Henry answered by a faint and stifled crow, after which Galoum climbed into the next and waded half out to hold his hand to Marie. "I will help Mademoiselle in," said Harold, extinguishing the boy with the lid, and leaving it to be fastened while he went to assist Marie. Marie turned to Monsieur de Vray with a sweet, grateful look in her dark eyes, which thanked him sufficiently, even had it not been for the few faltering words which were all she could say. "And, oh, Monsieur," she said, turning to the young Dutch baron, "shall we be able to come out of hiding before we are out of sight of France?" "I shall take care that it shall be so, Mademoiselle," answered the young man with respectful sympathy. Then Marie climbed up into the cart and lowered herself into the great musty barrel. It was cold and uncomfortable, certainly, especially when the lid was shut down on her and the strange jolting ride began. It seemed a long way to the docks, and there was no change until they had passed through the gates, and when there was a sudden stoppage, and even through the wood she could hear rough voices in hot altercation with their conductors. Then followed a few moments of dreadful suspense and sundry blows upon the barrels, and then the cart went on again for about 1/4 mile further. Then they stopped again, and listening intently, Marie guessed that they had arrived at the vessel. She heard the barrels taken off one after another, and wondered if the boys had gone first. Then she felt her own barrel laid hold of and prepared herself for a shock, but was lifted off with very little movement and carried, as she supposed, on to the vessel. Then there was a confusion of noises, out of which she could not distinguish anything, and she began to feel, though very slightly, the motion of the vessel. She was thankful to find that it did not upset her in the least, and wondered how the boys were getting on. The atmosphere of the barrel began to feel unpleasantly close and stuffy, and her thoughts, in spite of herself, went back to those terrible nights in the oven at St. Louis de Lenard. Her head began to feel very dizzy, and at length she fell into a kind of uneasy sleep, from which she was awakened by a vigorous knocking, and became aware that her prison was being opened. In a few minutes the lid was removed, and pulling herself up, she was helped out by Henry, Harold Van Eck, and the two men whom they had seen in the yard were also there. "Where is Gloom?" she asked. "In this barrel," said Henry, pointing to the next, on which the two men were already hard at work. Marie looked round her, but had only obtained a confused view of the hold of the ship before an exclamation from Henry made her turn round again. The lid of Gloom's barrel was off, but he did not appear. "Gloom! Gloom!" cried Henry, bending over the edge. "Monsieur, the light!" He caught the light from the young baron's hand without ceremony, and held it within the barrel. Gloom lay in a strange heap at the bottom, with his face downwards. "Gloom! Gloom!" cried Henry again, springing down beside him, while Marie, white and with a terrible alarm, took the lamp from him. "Give him out to me," said a strong, tender voice beside her, and Harold Van Eck leaned over the edge with outstretched arms. With some difficulty, Henry managed to raise his brother sufficiently for Harold to reach him. Then he was speedily lifted out, seemingly quite lifeless, with his head hanging back and his face deadly pale. "We must get him into the air immediately," said Harold, striding on at once, closely followed by Marie and Henry. A rush of fresh salt air met them as they emerged from the ladder and laid Gloom on a bench by the bulwark. One of the sailors went off for some brandy, and they tried to make him swallow a little, but it ran out again, and there was no sign of life. He was still supported by Harold, and Marie knelt by his side, trying to get down some of the brandy, while Henry chafed his hands. The two men, who had now followed him up from the hold, stood silently behind in an awkward sympathy. Some minutes must have passed in this way, and Marie, growing sick at heart with dumb apprehension, had ceased from her hopeless task, when there was a slight flutter of the eyelids, a faint gasp, and the next moment, a moment Marie never forgot, the great beautiful eyes opened quietly, and the pale lips moved in speech. "De Saint Croix unto death," he murmured. Then, as his consciousness came back, he tried to raise himself with an exclamation, but fell back fainting again. Marie eagerly administered the brandy, and this time it did not fail. He swallowed some of it, and a faint color came back to his cheek. In a few moments he was able to sit up again and answer their questions. He said he was not conscious of having fainted, and recollected the first stoppage in the dock, but supposed the confinement had stifled him soon after, as he could remember nothing more. He was very anxious to get to the other side of the vessel to see the shore, and which the other two had forgotten all about. Harold found them very comfortable places on the other side, and left them alone together to watch the retreating shores of their native land. They were already out of sight of Bordeaux, and the green slopes along the coast looked very bright and peaceful in the noonday sun. The three children sat hand in hand gazing, with feelings too deep for speech, at poor, distracted, yet fair France. Almost all day they sat there gazing, and when they came back again from a brief survey of their berths, which Henry had persuaded them to make, the sun was stooping down toward the sea, and the land was flushed with gold. The ship seemed to be sailing on toward the light, and a low black cloud came up above the golden lighted land. "New light, new life, and new friends," murmured Henry, as they turned westward, and the setting sun shone upon their faces. "But we carry the old in our hearts, and are de St. Croix through it all," whispered Marie, slipping her hand in his.